it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Oi, oi! I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Venus. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby.
Let me introduce your hosts.
Some things need discussing. Don't mistake being a sap for just being a realist.
No man has played for England more times than Ben Youngs.
If you're having mince / bolognese before the game, you don't want to splash it on your nice, clean white top.
Ah. Oh. Dan Cole. With his 100 caps, all his medals, his cuddly cute face and his beautifully shiny head.
For the love of rugby.
Enjoy.
We're back.
I was stuck. I had to come cross country. I was stuck behind some bloke in a VW Touareg. He might have listened to the pod, but he was one of those annoying people that's 45 mile an hour in a 60, but then 45 mile an hour in a 30.
I know the prick.
We'll find him. But no, that was it. That was the traffic. That was my traffic story. I just got stuck behind, someone I didn't rate as a driver. I've taken his unplate down and I will find him by the DVLA and I will send him a harshly written note.
How do you feel about people when they've just passed, put that on there? Does it affect the way you drive around them?
If you just pass, you know how to drive. Just drive.
I think I've asked you this before, but you were first time, weren't you?
Yeah, 3 minors.
Right.
What are we doing today?
Well, you know we love answering questions, Q&A, get everyone involved. All our questions today are from Reddit.
And we're on Reddit. You can find us. Just search u/. Is that forward slash? It's a forward slash. u/ love of rugby. And you can connect with us on all our other social media too.
Simple as that.
Cool. Right. Let's get on with it. So I'll start. Swept Fever 80. Thanks for the question. It says, who could play each other's position best? Would Dan Cole be a better scrum half than Ben Youngs could play prop? I'm going to go on a limb, Ben, and say I could play scrum half better than you could play prop.
I know. Do you know what? I'm not even going to debate that. I think
mainly from a physical welfare point of view.
Yeah. There's no way I don't think I could hit a scrum machine. Like, I'd absolutely crumble.
I mean, it would be the slowest game of rugby ever because I wouldn't be able to get to the breakdown or pass accurately. I mean, we go for a lot of tens. We would.
And this one, mate.
And part of that might be through my own personal choice.
Right. Of all the tens you've played with, who are you chucking an absolute paper bag and a hurricane to?
Freddie Burns. I love Freddie, but he's getting it, mate. He's getting it. Just loft one up there. Sorry, mate.
Wind caught that one, mate. Yeah. Sorry, bud.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I couldn't play prop. However, give me 10 years.
Yeah. I say, if we ask this question again in 10 years' time, I won't be able to bend over, but you will maybe put on some muscle mass.
Yeah, I might be taller if I laid on my side in about 10 years' time, so I'll lock it down on the loose head side.
Perfect. So that is that question. The Meander asks, podcast cage fight, who's winning? Obviously, everyone is immediately ganging up on Hask, but what happens after that?
We fill a lot in, don't we?
I think we've got a fighting chance. I think we've got more than a fighting chance.
Yeah, I'd back ourselves.
We'd have to play maybe tactical, maybe let the others like, fight them way out. Like Jimbo's got a long reach, so he might have to like let some tire himself out a bit, and then we'll work as a team. The thing about we'll do, Ben, is we'll work as a team, whereas the others will be individuals.
Let Jimbo give him the 1-2 absolute slinger. Right, coming at you. He'll deal with Hask. Goody can deal with Painter, and then it's just a brawl.
Yeah. Who wants it most?
Who wants it most? And by God, we want it.
Yeah, we want it.
Question from Tommy Russell. Do you shave your own head or get a barber in?
I shave my own head, Tommy Russell. Thank you for the question. There's no point getting a barber in. I only have to shave 3/4 of my head. And I'm not paying money for that when it's cheaper to buy a set of clippers and do it myself.
I just suddenly thought there was a time where Eddie Jones had obviously shaved his own head and he'd missed a load, but none of us had the balls to tell him. Like,
well, the medics had to tell him, didn't they?
Eddie, you've missed quite a big patch at the back there, mate. But he was basically walking around all evening with a...
About before a game.
With a patch. No one had the nerve to tell him.
Someone said it was before a game. He was like talking to everyone. Then he turned around and the back of his head was just missed.
It's absolutely cold. Can you remember also when Hask, he said that the guy's clippers had fallen off and he tried to put a hashtag in the side of his head.
And instantly regretted it.
He instantly regretted it. So then he tried to tidy it up, but it was so obvious you could see it. And he's like, no, the clipper blade fell off. So yeah,
that was also amazing. When he, was that Ireland away or something like that? And he basically fake tanned up. And then his white shirt the next day for walkthrough was covered in all around the collar and stuff, was just fake tanned, wasn't it?
It's like another lad who shan't be named, but his wife was away and he was looking to have an early night and needed some help to nod off. So to help that, he wanted...
He's having some frictional issues,
Yes.
So to help lubricate the issue, he looked in the drawer of his bedside table and found something that turned out to be moisturiser with fake tan in it. So when he was showering the next day and a small part of him was different to everything else, we had to ask... What's going on here? And then we found out.
Right. Burbank Elephant. My mum said that Dan is the nicest rugby player she'd ever met. How does that feel? Sorry, Ben. My mum's had nothing to say about you.
Well, it's a lovely thing to hear, Burbank Elephant's mum. It makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside that people see the real me and not the, you know, harsh exterior I put on. People's perceptions of you can be different to the reality of you. And people's perceptions obviously are based on you and me both and all the rugby players. It's like you see people for 80 minutes or something like that on social media and it's like you get perception. We actually meet people, like we're just normal blokes. We're a bit weird because we play rugby and we're a bit weird in general, but you're normal. Like the good thing about rugby players is we can be part of the community. You know, you can go out to the shop, wherever, and talk to people, interact to people. That's a good thing about rugby and rugby fans. So yeah, if people are civil to you, be civil back. That's the way it is, isn't it? So being a normal person. Away underscore associate 4589 says, love the pod lads. Who is the player you've played with / against that you feel didn't get the recognition they deserve from the public and or media? It's a good question, that.
It's a really good question.
I know he's been on the podcast, but Justin Tipperick, I think, gets left off the sort of like, he's been a great Welsh back rower, but he was always kind of, because Warburton was the captain, he was always not forgotten about, but you know what I mean? Like when you look at sort of, he was overshadowed, especially big personalities like Alan Wynne and people in that forward pack. But I always thought he was, if there's one player who could play probably any position apart from front row in rugby, the skill set to do everything, pass, catch, kick. I mean, I remember he used to kick kickoffs for us on Lions tours because he was the best kicker, that kind of stuff. It's someone like him. Obviously he's well known, he's been on Lions tours and stuff, so it's a bit of a cheat.
No, I agree with that. I think there's definitely him. I think ultimately when you play the game, you just want the respect from your peers and that's all you go after. But there's definitely players that have had amazing careers, done so much. You know when you're previewing them or playing against you how influential they are, right? But they don't get the public recognition.
I'm trying to think in the club world, like Leicester probably, you have blokes like Callum Green and people like that who, I try and look at things. I'm like, the fans see it and they're like, why is he in the team? He's rubbish. He doesn't do this, doesn't do that, doesn't do this. And you're kind of like, but there's a reason he gets picked. And a lot of that reason is for leadership reasons or can lead a line out, and they might not be the flashiest, but they're actually the glue that holds the team together, and they're the ones that lead the team through Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday during the week. You look at like a Callum Green, there'll be other ones out there that there's a reason they play every week. Anthony Allen at Leicester as well, when you're playing a great back line with Manu outside who does all the flashy work, the ball carrying, the try scoring, you got like Floody yourself inside who are great players, but he actually was the glue that held that sort of midfield and organised the forwards and did a lot of stuff off the ball that people didn't see. And it's those kind of players.
One of the most underrated, like didn't get the appreciation, is Mark Wilson played for us at England.
Yep.
And he was phenomenal. Played for Newcastle Falcons for years, but like absolute team man. And on the pitch, he was so good. So good. He did everything that you couldn't see, but he had to do it and he was class. So what a great guy and actually someone that totally undervalued. But if you played with him, you absolutely knew his worth.
Definitely. Sorry, I think this is just, this on the, it's going out live on Reddit, isn't it? And obviously I think Richard Hill's following it because he just texts me saying, what about me? I won a World Cup in 2003.
Papazulu? Is that right?
Papazulu.
What are the biggest misconceptions amateur and casual fans have about the professional part of the sport?
Biggest misconceptions? Professional players don't care. You know what I mean? Sometimes you lose and it's, oh, you don't care. And it's like, no, we do. I really do. You care. You deeply care because it affects your job, your life. You take it home for the next week or so. But, you know, it's tough when people say you don't care. You didn't try hard enough. It's like, no. We do care. This is what we do every day. This is why when he can't bend over on a Monday morning, he still get up and go to work and put the graft in and, you know, and get better. And so people do deeply care about it, but sometimes I don't think that gets shown.
I reckon they think that there's more space in the field than there actually is. So people think that you can play this brand where you can sling it and move it around. And it's actually, there's a lot of misunderstanding in terms of why people kick, how we kick, what the reasons behind that, the chance of you getting turned over, why there isn't space. But I think there's some perceptions that, you know, you just move the ball to the width and, you know, the space. It's just not how it works.
We've been in England teams and you can spend a lot of the week organising the kick battle and how you kick on the front foot and how to get the best thing and the chase and who's doing what and what roles people have got. Because it's not just the kick, it's the chase, it's the next phase, it's the phase after that and where people are. And there's a lot more goes into it than just, oh, he's kicked it again. What are the other misconceptions? When the team gets picked, again, because links back to another question, like there's a reason someone's been picked by the coach and the coach is really good because that's why they're coaching the team. People, even media people do it, it's kind of like, he's rubbish, why is he in the team? But they don't understand the bigger effect that, what do they call them? There's a swarm, I was listening to something, but it's like, not a swarm disruptor, but someone brings like the collective team together and those people, you need people in the team. You can't just have 15 individuals. And it comes back to team selection, I think, is fans and stuff sometimes think you just get the best 15 players on the field, let them play. It's tough to go into it sometimes because it's like, you can't go around saying, he's not playing because he's a dickhead. You can't really, can you? You can't go around being horrible to people because that's not what we do. But there is a level of that there's a reason this person's not playing. Yes, he might be really skillful, but he can't be, sometimes in a squad, especially World Cup squads, you have to be able to play, be first, second or third choice because you might not play. Some players can only be first choice, but if they're not first choice for England, they might not go at all. So you best get in the bloke who's the best at being third choice. You know what I mean? I've explained it badly, but that's probably the misconceptions and that people don't understand that actually. It is a team sport, so you need a team to get on and work together. Not be best mates, but you need to be the best team that works together to achieve the goal rather than the best collection of individuals or the best collection of talent.
America Eye comes in with, hi Dan, big fan. I know this is a tough question. How would you describe those years in between World Cup games and what it meant to you to be back on the World Cup stage?
Well, thank you for the question and the compliment in the question. I will try and do an abridged version because I could talk for 3 years. Where do I start? Yes, the Rugby World Cup 2019 final was difficult. I think it was difficult for all of us, but obviously the scrum got battered and wasn't the best. I think at that point, what probably gets you through is a certain code you try and live by, no matter sport, whatever it is, but like from a young age, you're told never give up. And I think just don't give up. You know what I mean? Always try your best. And we lost the World Cup final, but you just have to put one foot in front of the other. I think it's what we do with rugby players in general is a lot of the time we've been at clubs where someone gets sacked or someone gets injured or this happens, that happens, but the world doesn't stop. You have to keep moving. I think that's something that happened after that final for me. I also remember reading a book at the time. I think it was about stoicism or something like that, but it's basically like what's happened to you is ultimately it's a game. You know, there are people dying of famine. There are people doing this. There's people like in a lot worse situation. You're all right. And you kind of read that and you're like, yeah, actually I am. That's the attitude I'm going to take is I'm all right. Like I've still got friends, family, people that love me. It's a game of rugby. Like it is what it is. You know what I mean? I can't do anything about it now. So what can I do is just keep moving forward and getting on with things. And that's what I think. COVID, I think, happened in between that as well. And that probably helped definitely reassess priorities as in like, actually there's something really bad happening in the world. A lot of people are struggling. I'm sat at home with my family. We're healthy. We're all right. Eventually, I say eventually, it doesn't happen. I was selected again in 2023. And I think you probably use that time away from the game to appreciate how much it means to win. I think playing for England, whether you start, bench, whatever, just be involved is such a big thing. And you just want to help the squad and improve and best you can. You know what I mean? So that's where, again, it's a long answer, but it meant a lot.
Coley, do you want to email me the rest of that answer? No, I'm kidding. That is a very, very good answer, mate.
Thank you. Well, we'll move on because I've waffled there. It's a Par Six asks, when you've played as many high profile matches as you both, do the highs of winning and lows of losing get less extreme or are the emotions the same as they always have been? Loving the insights and anecdotes, keep it up.
Well, I think when you get older, you just learn to accept it for what it is. Like you prep all week to go and win, you prep all week to go and perform, but it doesn't mean you will. you can come out of a result where you win games that you shouldn't and you lose games that you should win. So I think you just become more accustomed to accepting it for what it is. If you've done your role in terms of the week and you haven't sold yourself short in terms of your preparation, you've done everything you can and it's not enough, that's all you can do. And I think it just comes with more experience. It comes with the family and the kids, and of course you want to win, but you know that that's not a guarantee, you know. But what you can guarantee is you're prepping the week and how you go after it and doing everything like that. And then after that, so no, it's changed a lot. I think when you're a young player, you hang on to things. You lose a game, it's your weekend's ruined, and you sort of, it's ruined until you play again. If you win a game, everything's great, but it's never that. It's never that good, and it's never that bad. It's somewhere in between. I guess you learn that when you get older. That's just, it is what it is in terms of that emotional high, and it's not good for you. It's not healthy for you to sort of feel every emotion. You just got to take it for what it is.
Yeah, I think we were probably fortunate in regards to when we first started, say, at Leicester, we came into a very successful team, whereas actually winning was just almost the standard. Losing was the end of the world, whereas winning, it was like, we're on to the next one, and you almost didn't enjoy the wins. And then for me, a big part of my career, when Leicester, we finished outside the playoffs, and I think we finished 11th two seasons in a row, you actually realise that winning games of rugby is really hard, and they should be celebrated. That's been probably at the tail end of my career, especially with England and Leicester. It's been made of a thing of like international rugby. With Eddie Jones, was like, we win a game of rugby, I don't care who's it against, it's a tough thing to do. Enjoy it. Enjoy the moment, because we'll never get this moment back. And I think that's more, as you get older, you appreciate probably the victories for me. Not so many, you go over the board and enjoy it, but you actually spend time and just reflect on stuff and enjoy it, rather than being like, oh, just on to the next one, to the next one. You actually take some pride in it. And I say, similar with losses, is you're never as bad as you are. You're never as good as you are. And when you get older, you learn that, and you can look at a defeat and go, actually, we did this well, we need to improve this. And you become a bit more, it still hurts the emotion, but you become a lot more probably analytical and trying to solve things, rather in the youth, you're kind of like, oh, we're rubbish. You go, say, the ups and downs, whereas you get older, you balance those out and you can go a bit more, what do we need to get better? This. What can we do better? This. How do we win the next game? This. Because, as you say, during the week, you always go into the hope of, we're going to win this game, you lose, and then you fall off a cliff, you know, emotionally, and then you get in a bigger hole. So it's, yeah, as you get older, you learn. You lose a game of rugby, you go home, your kids don't really care, they're just happy to see you. And that's one of the big things I find, like, recovery wise, is going home and just switching off is one thing you learn, I think, being older. When you're younger, it's kind of like, you go home, have a bad day, you go home and you sulk, whereas like sometimes you go home now with family, you can't sulk because
kids have had a great day out, they're happy, yeah, they've watched the dad, yeah, run around, they you know, yeah. Oh, did you lose, dad? Yeah, we lost. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we played Quinns in this earlier on in the season, and my son's now sort of interested in rugby and stuff, and he said, oh, who are you playing on the weekend? I said, oh, playing Harlequins. He was like, does Marcus Smith play for them, dad? And I said, yeah. He went, oh, you're going to lose. He's well good, isn't he? And I was like, all right. When do you become such an expert in rugby? But yeah, he literally said, like, oh, you're probably not going to win that because he's really good, isn't he? I was like, yeah, no, he is pretty good. Yeah. And we didn't. So he was right. So he was grounded for a week. Traditional war, 7-3, 6-0. Favorite tour moment?
Lots and lots and lots. From Manu jumping off a boat.
I think we'll actually have to do a podcast on actual tours.
The moments happen naturally, aren't they? It's not like enforced fun and like, right, you're going to do this today. They just happen moment, like together as a team, you go for a coffee or you just do something spontaneous. But yeah, I remember the Lions tour in Australia. Tom Croft decided he'd do the, what was Dom Jolly's thing? He decided to do Trigger Happy TV, didn't he? As the snail going across a pedestrian crossing and crawled along it until the police turned up and told him off and they shat his pants.
I do remember that. In South Africa in 2018, went on tour and we're in these mini groups and each group had to host the night. Anyway, I got this like hold of this reptile company and was like, can you bring in a load of snakes and like stuff to like scare the lads? So they put us in this little room and it was tiny. Anyway, this guy comes in, he had one leg and he had a crutch and he came in like this, like with all these boxes, which his daughter was carrying and she would have only been about 14. Opens up these box and they're in like a sack. He lifts them up and like slamming these sacks on the table, right? And things like moving about. And honestly, I'm like from here to you, there this guy is in this tiny room. And like he just pulls out this like King Cobra that comes out. Like he's literally putting his hand in there. Do you know what I mean? Like pulls it out, slaps it on the table. This thing's like, lads are all like shooting backwards. So we've had like amusing things like that. And then he got out a green mamba that came out and a black mamba that came out, but then he couldn't control it. Honestly, mate, it was absolute chaos, but great fun. So I think we should do a separate pod in terms of tour stuff, but there's loads of stuff that happens like away from the game.
There is too much.
We've had more than 30 messages from people asking this. Dan, what is your favourite service station?
Oh, my favourite service station. I do like, well, I'm actually a bit high end when it comes to service stations. There's one in Cumbria called T-Bay, which is a lot like Gloucester Services. Posh, you could probably do your whole week shop there.
Get my cheese from there and have it at the back of the bus.
Yeah, get your cheese, get some biltong. Basically, you remortgage your house, spend it there and then enjoy your weekend. But they're my favourite ones, just because they're a bit different. But I don't mind. If you need to stop on the service, I don't stop for fuel on services because that's ridiculously overpriced. But for a quick Costa or Starbucks or other coffee shop supply, yeah, Tollington. It's probably the most used because it's M1.
Mm.
Yes, I am. Klutz asks, what's the oddest or most out there thing you've been advertising? Sorry to read that slowly.
Nothing that's too out there. Like, obviously, I've done the stitch up of the...
Getting naked.
I've been stitched up a few times. Where I've not stitched up in terms of who sponsored me. They've been great sponsors, but in terms of like what I actually need to do for them. So if we take, I don't want to name the brand, but if we take in an ad that I did recently, and like, yeah, got a sponsorship for you. They want to do a little bit of filming, nothing too spontaneous, pretty easy. They'll come to your house and it'll be absolutely fine. Okay, mate. Yeah, sounds simple enough. Right, get some dates to you. Dates come in. Yeah, I can do that one. Brilliant. Okay, next minute. Lot turn at my house, like crew, the lot. I'm like, okay. They're like, so have you got the, you know, the rundown of what you need to do?
The brief.
The brief? No, I haven't. You know, he hasn't sent it over. Oh, okay, this is what you're doing. Right, so you're going to be in the shower. Sorry, what? Yeah, you're going to be in the shower, soaping up. Sorry, I thought I was just doing deodorant.
Yeah.
No, you're going to be... It's like absolute...
Seen this video before.
Absolute stitch up. Anyway, I'd have not had a car for 6 weeks leading up to that advert had I known that. So, but great sponsors, but... always handy if you get the brief about 8 weeks in advance, you can actually...
Yeah, prepare for it.
Prepare for it.
It's more like, say, when you're doing appearances and people go, do something funny. And you're like, I can't. So that's the sort of, oh, here's behind the scenes content. And you're like, oh God, I've got nothing for you.
It's more, yeah, it's when you do a sponsor's day or whatever and they get you to do like bits to camera and clip and they suddenly think that you're an actor. And it's like, what do you want me to do? And it's like, oh, can you do that with more energy? Can you do this with that? Can you do that? Or I want you to come in and like do a shocked expression. I'm like, what? Just play rugby, mate. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what do you want me to do? But they're all very good.
Right. Calfonso asks, would you rather fight a Dan Cole-sized Ben Youngs or a Ben Youngs-sized Dan Cole? Well, I would say I'm working this one out. I'm really hard. So
you're really
probably,
hard.
Probably a Dan Cole-sized Ben Youngs would beat up a Ben Youngs-sized Dan Cole.
Yeah, I'm not going to dispute that.
Okay, right, fine, yeah.
Right,
would you have your my size head or would you have your own head? Because if you had my cranium, you could probably do some damage, mate.
But no, I think you'd win that fight.
Right.
Manuka, in an interview some years ago, Dan was talking about reading philosophy. Is this still something you're into? And do you ever have proper philosophical? I can't fucking say that.
Not with you, is the answer to this
philosophical
question.
Philosophical debates with teammates. And for both of you, what are you planning to do when you fully retire for rugby? Oh, have they not been listening to the show?
Well,
what are we planning on doing?
Well, podcasting.
We're already in Panama, Trinidad and Tobago.
Correct.
Montana.
Michigan.
Michigan. Well, it might be Montana. We don't know yet.
Yeah, it might be there as well. Right, yes. I used to read some philosophy stuff. I don't mind doing it. I don't really have any debates, no, because there's people who are a lot smarter than me and take a lot more seriously than me in camp, but... Yeah, I've read some philosophy in my time. I couldn't quote you any, but I like to use it in the well-rounded individual that I am.
Class.
Wes Snyder, hopefully the football player, but maybe not. Ever thought about playing in Japan?
I did until we went to Miyazaki on a training camp and I couldn't breathe.
Oh, it was like 40 degrees and 99% humidity or something, wasn't it?
And no one could catch.
Oh.
Have I thought about playing in Japan? No, I haven't really, to be honest with you. I actually haven't. Obviously, recently finished with the England stuff, but I'm 34 now. I've got a young family of three. Everyone's settled. I haven't really got a reason to go there as such yet. But we can both move out there together, Coley. Take the pod with us. And
yeah.
Mitsubishi can be our partner sponsor.
Yeah.
Honda.
Or Honda.
Samson.
I think it was a period when we were out there in 2019 where you kind of go somewhere, don't you? You've probably never thought about it. Then you get your eyes open to it. Like, oh, actually, Japan's really quite a cool country. It's got rugby. Obviously, there's, you know, the rugby's growing. Would it be cool to play out here? Yeah, like probably, yeah. And then the practicalities, you say, come in, and it's like, well, they don't need a slow, fat, balding prop. Bald prop. It would be nice to play 10 games a year in some regards and get paid for that. But, no, you think about it, but then the reality is you wouldn't because you've got family and all the rest of it.
No, I agree. It's a nice thought. it would be a great country to travel in, like we did in 2019, but practicality of it, where we are at our age and the families, is just, it's just not something I'd do. But if you're, I can see the absolute lure to doing it, especially if you're foreign lads that want to get back closer to home.
Okay, Heavy Dwarf asks, who's the freakiest athlete you've played with? Not in terms of rugby ability, just a thoroughbred. And who is the best player who, let's say politely, made the best of what they had?
So let's think, Tom Croft, Nick Asikwe is an incredible athlete, actually.
In terms of like power and the ability to jump, he's 120 kegs and he can literally, he's got the jump of like an NBA player and the reach. So yeah, he's a freaky, genetically very, very freaky. A random one from the clubland would be someone like Greg Bateman.
Yeah.
Who looked like a toad, but actually was incredibly strong, incredibly powerful. And fitness-wise, I remember running up hills one pre-season and he was like beating back rowers.
Thomas Waldron was another one who actually was in terrible shape, like terrible shape, but could run all day, like phenomenal. Like you do a fitness test, like he's pretty much winning it.
Well, apparently he broke his, I remember him telling me a story when he was about 19 or 20, he broke his ankle, I think, when he was the Hurricanes, and then didn't run 3 months. The first time he ran was like the 3K challenge they did the first day of pre-season, and he ended up winning it. I often think sometimes like freakiest athletes are blokes that look dreadful, but they can look dreadful because they've actually got really good genetics and can be freaky, a bit like Waldrum. Like, you look at him and he was a bit tubby, let's put it that way. But in terms of being an athlete, he was phenomenal because he didn't almost need to be in great nick to play the game he did. Whereas, say, some guys probably, like you and I, don't have that luxury of being able to be overweight and carry excess mass because we're not that genetically gifted, do you know what I mean? Whereas some of the freaks in rugby, actually, they're probably the people you're least likely to be freaks because they don't look it, but they actually are.
But then you look at like Nick Asikwe, like when you actually look at his physique and how he's a big bit of kit and extremely athletic with it. So he'd be up there. And as you say, like someone like Tommy Waldron, where actually aesthetically on the eye, it's like, ooh,
yeah.
Someone's enjoying being a rugby player. But phenomenal like engine and stuff. So it's kind of, they don't always add up, do they?
No.
Equally, we've seen lads with, you know, unbelievable rigs that are crap.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Back from the ad breaks, Mimsy 1, question for either of you. What is the most embarrassing moment of your rugby career on or off the field? A player we were playing with, we were away at Saracens.
Yeah.
You got crunched in the stomach, like tackled hard, and he shat himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like junior rugby or, you know, or local grassroots where you can just run in and sort yourself out. You know, for him to come off the pitch, he'd actually have to be subbed. So he had to play for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
With a turd in his pants.
Yeah.
Until half time, he sorted himself out. So that's pretty embarrassing. But no one knew about that apart from the team that was there. But now everyone knows about it.
Until we found his undershorts in the toilet after the game as well to confirm he had it. Anyway, Rasta Mouse asks, what does a South African scrum feel/smell like? I don't know what it smells like. Just eight really big, strong, sweaty men, I guess. It feels like physically they're really big and strong. And mentally, you know you're going to have to be at your best because they're coming for you. So, yeah, it's one of the biggest challenges in sport, I'd say, or scrummaging against them. So, yeah. Anyway, next question. Cheese Petrel asks, question for Dan, what was it like being an apprentice to the great Julian White at Leicester? And question for Ben, can you describe how you felt getting on the day of your 115th cap for England, beating the long-held record of the Fun Bus, which is Jason Leonard?
It was an incredible feeling because, you know, you just don't know when your career is going to end. You don't know when it's going to all finish for you. I got to 100, which I was really happy about, and I stayed involved. I still felt that I had more to give, and I did. And then when I got to that record, it was more of a, to be fair, the day and coming on, it's more of a reflection of everyone else that's played a role in getting me to that point than it is for me. So of course it's nice. It's a nice milestone. But for me, I felt like it was more the moment for everyone that's had to have the highs and lows with me, that have traveled around watching me, you know, my wife, kids, my parents, everyone that's played a part and sort of had to go on this journey with me as such. It was a reflection of their hard work and sacrifice that they'd done to allow me to achieve that moment. So yeah, that's kind of how I felt, really. I felt like it was more their moment than it was mine, which is how I wanted it to be.
I'll answer the question about what was it like being an apprentice to the great Julian White. It was a fantastic learning experience. I would say I learned so much from Julian White in regards to how to lead, for instance, a scrum and how to be on the rugby field. It wasn't like he was best buddy, like telling me what to do, this, but the fact you just observe people and the way he was able to say with a scrum at Leicester, be like, I'm the tight head, I'm in charge. If it goes badly, I look bad. So we're going to get eight blokes working hard together and do it. And I think his attitude to training every day and his attitude to not taking any shit from anyone, you kind of like, you know, sort of set the standard in regards to mentality and playing Leicester.
Harvey Normal Real, what's the best tip you can give under 16 tight heads?
Best tip? Well, obviously, I always say enjoy the game, play for the right reasons, and B, probably tight heads front rowers nowadays is just try and throw yourself into everything and try and learn as much, whether it's, you need your core skills of the game, which obviously at some point will be scrummaging, lineup lifting, but don't get left behind in regards to like ball carry, tackle, even jackal work, clearing out, breakdown, all that kind of stuff. Just do get your core skills right. You always need players that can scrum more, carry a ball, clean out, you know, that kind of stuff. You always need those skills. You always need players and teams that can do that. So that'd be my main advice.
Maybe he's dead. Question for Dan. What is your memories of the headbutt fend on Kean Healy? Definitely the most an inventive piece of attacking skill I've ever seen.
I don't really have any memories of it, but it's some of the boys came across. I mean, Bevan Rodd came across it at the World Cup and he said, that's the most Brexit thing I've ever seen. Which probably sums it up nicely.
You just picked up from the ruck, didn't you? Was it like?
Yeah, I picked up from the ruck.
Which way's the trial on that way? Yeah. Follow me then, lads.
Ran sideways. I think I put my fend up and he went high and it just ended up, it looks worse. Obviously, I didn't mean to that at all, but. Ron Swaffle asks, would you rather live in a big dog's mouth or have a little dog live in your mouth?
Would you rather live in a big dog's mouth or have a little dog in your mouth?
I need to know how little the little dog is. Because if it's like a chihuahua, it's not going to fit. But if we're talking about a made-up dog, then if it's really, really small, probably that. But again, how big is the big dog's mouth? Because maybe we actually are living in a world of a big dog's mouth, aren't we? And the big dog is so big that the world is encumbered with his mouth.
I think that's the answer you wanted for.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we'll live in the big dog's mouth. Might be the world we're living in today. Right. Ultimate Pigeon. Who's the phantom shitter of the England squad? There has to be one. Well, I'll let you know, Ellis Genge actually went into the toilet at Pennyhill the other day, and despite berating people for using it for number twos, he actually did one and then claimed he didn't.
So there we go.
Yeah.
For Fudge Cake, hi both. Did you ever play against a player who was particularly smelly?
There are players that are particularly smelly, but I'm not prepared to name them or out them on this group. But there's no one I've ever remembered playing against going, oh my God, they stink.
It's more teammates.
There's more teammates when you get to the end of the day and you're in huddles and you're like,
that's fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have different, there's different levels. Some lads are very good, hygienic and everything you'd want them to be.
Yeah.
Other lads.
Yeah.
Yes. Less said about it.
Yeah. P. McCracken, 84, asks, what role and responsibilities do you think players have in reducing the abuse that referees currently receive? Reports seem to suggest that it keeps getting worse, but there also seems to be a desire for the majority of fans to move away from it, particularly after the Whistleblowers documentary came out. I'll ask that. Well, I'll ask firstly, yes, we have a responsibility as players. I think one of the core fundamentals of rugby is you respect the referee and the referee's word is final. And I don't think on the field, I don't think it's really been an issue. I think sometimes it's normally dealt with there and then by referees. I think probably the bigger problem is off the field, away on social media and stuff like that, which is probably a more societal issue than purely rugby, because it's quite hard to, people use social media now to vent, don't they? You just have to remember there's only a small portion of the population and some people will always go too far. Is there anything they can do about it? It's not just, you know, it's not just rugby referees getting abused. I think lots of people across the board are getting abused. So I don't have the answers to that. But yes, I think rugby has a responsibility to the referees and fans and everyone else out there, players, to respect each other and probably set an example of how to behave and respect. And I think it always has done. But maybe the game needs to shift back that way a bit to almost lead the way in terms of the wider world.
Nicely put. Dan, thank you. Plenty of questions as always, enjoyable, so keep them coming in and we'll always do our utmost to answer every single one. If you're a new listener, go and check out our episodes about game day. That's probably one of the best ones we've done so far. Do you not think, Coley?
It's up there, probably top 10. Different people have got different opinions, Ben, but you should listen to them all and make your own opinion up, really. But if you have listened to all our episodes and you need another podcast, go and find Joe Marler's Things People Do.
For the Love of Rugby, it's ad-free on Amazon Music.
If you listen on Apple, you can get it ad-free for £1 a week.
We will be back on Monday.
For the Love of Rugby.
Sports Social Podcast Network.